just going to be a very brief introduction about meditation practice, a very kind of general, simple, the same thing as always, which is actually very nice, because meditation is a very simple thing here. And often what we just need to do is just to remind it of the basics. If you can do the basics, then basically meditation is supposed to work, right? So it's really the basics that actually matter here. So remember that the purpose of this is to, the idea of meditation practice is to find some kind of calm and peace. That's really the purpose of this. And that kind of, if you keep that in mind as we progress through the meditation, you have kind of a general guideline which is very easy to follow, right? It's supposed to become more peaceful, more calm as we go along here. So keep that in, at the back of your head at all times. And then you have some way of, in a sense, monitoring yourself, right? You know whether you're heading in the right direction or the wrong direction. It's supposed to become more peaceful, right? More at ease, more relaxed, more compassion, right? More sense of just feeling better about yourself, basically, is what it comes down to. But to be able to do that, you have often the best thing to start with is actually the body itself, the physical body. So make sure, first of all, that you are relaxed and you're comfortable. This is the first thing here. And, you know, just sit comfortably, basically. Lean slightly towards the back, right? Put feet firmly planted on the floor. And just, you know, your hands basically any old way, as long as it's comfortable. And the meditation lasts for about, how long is it, half an hour or so? You know, you're going to sit reasonably still for half an hour. So just sit comfortably. This is the most important thing. You find around the world, you find meditators think that the importance of, you know, meditation is about being tough. It's about not moving, sitting still, cross-legged on the floor, lotus posture. Lotus posture is kind of special posture where you cross the legs on top of each other. And if you haven't done it before, it's very, very painful. You have to pull your leg up, right? It's very hard, very hard. But it's not about that at all, actually. It's not about your posture. What matters is that you're nice and comfortable. So the body kind of disappears, right? The idea of the body is for the body to disappear. Because meditation is really a mental thing. It's about calming down the mind. So once the body is comfortable, you're not torturing yourself, the next thing is to find out whether you are at ease, whether the body is at ease. Are you feeling tense? Are you feeling relaxed? How are you feeling about yourself? So you always start off the meditation to make sure that you feel really good in the body. You feel really relaxed. You don't feel any stress. And of course, the vast majority of people during the day, there is usually some degree of stress there. It's very rare that you are absolutely 100% relaxed during an ordinary day, when you go to work, when you have all these other things to do. So this is an opportunity to feel really, really relaxed. And this is actually one of the first benefits of meditation practice. You're just feeling the ease of the body, right? Feeling really relaxed. Just notice that. Notice as you go through the meditation, what it feels like to be really relaxed. It's not a feeling you usually have, right? So feel what it feels like just to have ease, like you breathe freely. There's no kind of tension in the stomach region anywhere. The breath is kind of goes naturally in and out all by itself. So you start focusing on the body, feel the body when it really is relaxed. And then as we progress, you monitor yourself and you find out whether you are relaxing or not. So hopefully you will be relaxing a bit as we go through. If you find yourself getting more tense, then you have to think twice about what you're doing here. Some people get tense in meditation because they use too much force. So the idea is not to use too much force, but just relaxing instead here. And so this is in itself is actually enough to have some benefit from meditation practice. Just the fact that you can relax and feel good physically is actually sufficient already, and you will feel that there is a great benefit there straight away. And what you are doing here, that when you are relaxing the body, it's not just the body relaxing, but it's also the mind, because the mind is what controls the body, right? So if you feel tense in any way, if you feel the body has, it hurts or whatever, usually it's because the mind is too active, the mind is controlling the body. So by releasing the pressures or the problems in the body, you're also calming the mind at the same time, right? Double benefit, body and mind in one go. Very nice. And of course, that's what we're trying to do ultimately, is to calm the mind, right? So by focusing on the body, you're already heading in the right direction. once the body, and this sometimes, you know, getting the body to be nice and peaceful and calm and relaxed can often take maybe the full half an hour. It depends on your state of mind that particular day. It depends on your, you know, on your life right here and right now. Some people have a lot of pressures in their life and problems in their life. So sometimes you can't even sit up for half an hour because it's too painful. We had one lady here a few months ago who said, "Oh, you know, I'm going through a really hard time in my life. What should I do? I can't really sit still there." Then you can walk back and forth instead, right? Go into the corridor or something like that. And that's perfectly okay. So you do whatever it takes. But if you get to the point where the body is nice and relaxed, then the next stage is to focus on the mind itself. And the way to do that is basically to try to avoid and interfere in your mind. Try not to control, try not to be the person in charge saying you must think like this, you must be peaceful, right? You're meditating, how come you're not peaceful? You should be peaceful in meditation. Of course that is the wrong way, because that means control. And wherever there is control, there is thinking. Thinking and activity in the mind comes from trying to control the mind in the first place. So by standing back, by not controlling, by just observing, by not willing anything, by not doing anything, things tend to calm down by themselves. This is actually quite hard to do, but this is a very, very useful exercise. Learning to just relax, learning to allow things to be, learning not to, you know, to get your kind of fingers in there, trying to control things and allow things to be. And one of the problems, one of the reasons why it is so hard is because we have expectations in our meditation. We think that meditation should be like this. I shouldn't be thinking, I shouldn't be tired, I should be clear and bright, right? And I should be able to, you know, to have insights or whatever. And this is part of the problem, because we have expectations, we have desires that arise, you know, to fulfill those expectations, basically. And there was there's a book which was written many years ago, which was called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And the idea of that book is basically that if you are going to meditate, if you're going to do Zen meditation, all meditation is basically the same, at least in the initial stages. So if you're going to do meditation, you have to have this idea of the beginner's mind. And the beginner's mind is the mind where there is no expectation, right? Because the beginner, you don't know what you're doing, you're sitting down. So those of you who are beginners here, wonderful, this is a great opportunity. So all of us, try to think about what it's like to be a beginner. No expectation, don't know what's going to happen, right? Because you don't know what's going to happen. Whatever goes, it's okay. You know, if you're lots of thinking, tired, well, that's just life, that's the way it is. So you don't expect anything. When you don't expect anything, you don't have any desires. So go back to the beginning here. Beginner's mind, then mind, beginner's mind. That's a nice little phrase to kind of use to guide you, put you on the right path, in the right direction. And then gradually, as this process happens, sometimes you know the mind does not become peaceful, sometimes it becomes a little bit peaceful. So one of the tricks is just to learn to enjoy to be here. And you will find that just sitting there and just watching things, being here, right, hearing maybe a few sounds, feeling the sense of peace in this room, and just enjoying what is happening here, right here and right now, enjoying the fact that you have nothing to do, right? No chores, no business, no job, no house, no family. All of those things are out of the way. Just enjoying that. No burdens, right? Except for sitting here and breathing. See, you can't get much more simple than that. So you just simplify to the max, and then you just try to enjoy what is happening right here now. And if you're able to enjoy what is happening right here, right now, then you're really on the right path with the meditation. It's all about enjoying what you're doing. If you have expectations, it means you're looking to the future. You're looking to what might happen next. And it's very hard to enjoy the moment right now if you're looking to the future. If you have no expectations, and you just enjoy whatever is happening, that is when meditation is going in the right direction. So whatever you have, learn to enjoy that. Whatever peace there is, you enjoy that. And you learn to focus in the right way. And then you encourage yourself and say, wow, this is actually quite nice, right? And you feel a bit of what we call rapture or happiness arising inside, because you feel the beauty of the situation, and then you're really, really on the right track. Okay, so let's try this in practice and see what happens. So. Okay, so to start off with just feeling your body, make sure that you're nice and comfortable, that you sit in a position that you think you can maybe hold for half an hour or so. And if you find that somewhere during this half an hour you start to feel uncomfortable, please feel free to move your body so you can feel comfortable again. Then, first of all, just feel the body again, and this time don't feel for the direct comfort, but feel for any tension that you have in the body. Usually there's some tension there somewhere, so just kind of scan your body. Often the tension accumulates in the stomach region, perhaps the shoulders or the face, and as you scan the body, try to release that tension. If you feel tense in the stomach, take a few deep breaths. And then as you breathe out, just allow the muscles to relax and feel at ease. Just keep on feeling the body, and wherever you find any tension whatsoever, just imagine yourself breathing in through that spot, and as you breathe out, everything relaxes nicely, and you feel nice and relaxed. So if you have any tension in the shoulder area, imagine yourself breathing in, expanding the shoulders, and then as you breathe out, it all relaxes very nicely. Just keep on staying with the body for now. One of the problems of meditation is to move on too fast. Don't move on too fast. Just go very, very slowly. Just be as patient as you possibly can. keep on focusing on the body. Don't do anything until you feel 100% relaxed. If you find it hard to relax 100%, then try to change your attitude a little bit of compassion towards yourself always goes a long way. One way of doing this is just to say to yourself, to say to your body, thank you body, thank you for looking after me and being at my service for so many years. Now it is my turn to look after you. May you be well. May you relax, may you be at ease. just feel how delightful it is when the body relaxes. If you get to the point where the body is completely relaxed, just stay with that and just feel that and feel how good it is. And then you start to understand the benefits of meditation practice right there. Then, as the body is completely relaxed, you just imagine yourself as a passenger on a journey. There's nothing for you to do except to observe what is happening, except to stand back, to let there be a distance between yourself and all the things happening. And all you do is observe. Now a sound, now a thought, now peace, now beautiful space between you and all the phenomena that you are seeing. or once in life, there is absolutely nothing to be done. All there is to do is just to rest and to not react, not to judge. There's nothing to do except sitting here and just being, just existing right here, right now. And what a wonderful thing that is, not to have anything to do in the whole world. All you have to do is to exist. And just experience that freedom, that sense of liberation from having nothing to do whatsoever. Keep on being the passive observer. Again, there's nothing that you have to do. There's no right, there's no wrong. It's just phenomena passing by on the screen of your mind. You just observe them, just allow them to be. And as you do that, feel the peace. There's a peace that comes together with just observing in this way. And just feel the beauty of that peace. As you feel the beauty of the peace, just allow it to expand and expand and expand, and gradually, gradually, your mind becomes even more peaceful. heart, let us try to change the direction of the meditation slightly. So I'd like you to try to bring to mind somebody you admire, somebody you think is a wonderful person, a wonderful spiritual quality, somebody who is kind, somebody who is compassionate, somebody who is peaceful and wise. Just visualize that person in your mind's eye and see them with a big smile on their face, and just reflect on those qualities for a few moments. Think to yourself what a wonderful thing it is that there are such people in the world. And then wish that person, wish them well. May you be well, may you be happy. Keep the image of that person in your mind's eye, and don't be afraid. Open up your heart, say it with your whole being, to this beautiful person. May you be well, may you be happy. Wonderful thing it is to be able to wish somebody else happiness and well-being. What a powerful feeling that is. But you have to allow it to come from your heart, from deep within yourself, and allow it to come out, not to be afraid of these feelings. Allow them to come out, and then the power of these things arise. So keep on that image of somebody beautifully smiling in your mind. And again, wish them happiness and well-being. May you be happy. May you be well. And then again, towards the end, just also remind yourselves of how fortunate you are to be able to be part of a group like this. People who practice the spiritual path, people are trying to do something good, something positive for themselves and also for the rest of the world. And what a wonderful thing it is that there even are such groups of people in this world. So now say to everyone in this room, all your spiritual friends, all these people who help you forward on the path, may every one of you, may you be happy, may you be well. Coming to the very end of the meditation session. Now is the time to take stock and to ask yourself if you're feeling any better than you did before. And if you are feeling better, then ask yourself why. What is the reason? What are the things that made you get where you are now? And once you start to understand the causes for meditation, you start to be able to take charge of your own meditation practice. So just reflect for a few moments before we come to the very end. Very good. So, anybody want to say anything? Anybody have anybody enjoy the experience? Anybody okay? Good. Anybody have any problems? Anyone fell asleep? It's actually quite nice to fall asleep because it means you're relaxing, right? So if you fall asleep, that's okay. It's a very common experience in meditation. Usually people either they fall asleep or they think all the way through. That's kind of two standard things. And sometimes it's often like that. And then occasionally you get a really nice meditation, right? It's often like that. And sometimes it's when you come here to the Armada group or you go to the Buddha Society or whatever. That's when the meditation comes together because like a energy present. Then when you try by yourself, it's sort of it's more difficult sometimes. So maybe you need to listen to a talk or something. Anybody want to say anything? Nobody wants to comment? What about some of the new ones? Are you okay? Yes. Okay. Please.
When you're like, I've only been twice now, yeah. 3 times. Found at the start, my mind is like million miles an hour it's going. And like it doesn't really slow down towards just that very end before you run the thing. Is that sort of normal?
That's extremely normal. That's incredibly normal.
Before you've done the thing, I could feel my neck just like,
That's very, very common. It's one of the most difficult things is actually to slow down the mind because the mind is kind of used to running and all those kind of things. Yeah.
First 20 minutes is probably still.
Yeah.
I even got a bit teary.
Yeah. Sorry?
I even got a bit teary.
Oh, okay.
As well.
Yeah.
Because, there's certain things I was thinking of, like grief or loss type things.
Right, yeah, sure. All these things come up, you know, all the past comes back. Yeah, very normal, extremely, very, very normal, yeah. So, and the important thing there is to actually realize you can't really do so much about these things, because these are kind of the conditions of the mind, which, you know, all these things, now you're sitting still, this is all the past kind of coming up in the present moment. You can't do too much about it. So really what you have to do is just to be patient. You just have to sit back and wait. And if you're able to do that, and this is the idea with kind of just observing and just being aware, is that the point is that the whole thought process is kept going because you want to think. You may not be able to see that, but that's actually what it looks like. All these thoughts are just coming up in your mind, right, from kind of from outer space or whatever. But actually, they are because you want to think these things. So by there is some very subtle desire at a very deep level that you may not be able to see, which actually brings these things up. That's why you have it there in the first place. So the idea is that's why I'm saying, you know, you withdraw a little bit, and it's like you see it as a screen, right? You kind of become the observer. Because by being the observer, you don't actually will anything anymore. You don't kind of create these things anymore. So this is the idea of being the observer, is just to see, you know, you see things happening. It's not easy. It's actually quite hard, because you tend to get drawn into the script all the time, you know, become part of the movie and you kind of, you know, in the middle of it. So that's why it's very important to do things gradually. And a lot of that thinking, you will actually feel it in your body. The mind is very active. You also tend not to have a body which is 100% relaxed. So you start off by just relaxing. So you feel, you know, 100% at ease. I do that with every meditation I do. I always start off by just feeling my body relaxing. Even though I've been doing it for 20 years, I still do that. I know Adam Brahm too does that. He's been meditating for, how long has he been meditating for? 45, 50 years, something like that. And because you tend to feel these things in your body, basically.
And it's sort of like normal to take a while when starting out.
Yeah, it is quite normal. But I mean, the idea here is that every kind of step in meditation has its benefits, right? So even though it's normal, even if you do a little bit, it will have a little bit of benefit already. And if you find your mind is very active, it can often be useful to start off with a little bit of loving kindness meditation, for example. I did that towards the very end. But sometimes you can start with that. You know, if you're already feeling quite good or quite happy or whatever, and you wish, if you wish other people well, it's a very powerful way of calming down your mind. When you really wish other people well, your mind becomes very peaceful very quickly. So that's another way of doing it. So you have to experiment a little bit, try different ways. Let's see what works for you, basically. People are slightly different. Not very different. We're pretty much the same, which is kind of, you know, a bit of a downer if we want to be special. But that's usually why it is. Okay, anything else? Anybody else wants to say anything? Yeah. Yes.
This is getting away from the meditation, but when I was driving here today, on the radio, they were saying that the Dalai Dalai Lama has decided that he's not going to be reincarnated himself. And the Chinese are very upset about it.
Yeah, okay. That's funny.
The conversation with Dalai Lama seemed like a political thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's all about politics. That's what it is, isn't it? I think the idea of not reincarnating is about politics, and the Chinese reaction is about politics.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about politics, and I'm very skeptical to this idea that Dalai Lamas have kind of reincarnated as the same person anyway. You know, over the past centuries or whatever. That's not usually how things work. Yeah. The Buddha doesn't say anything about deciding your destiny and reincarnating and coming back and these kind of things. So maybe it is possible under special circumstances, but I think the reason why Dalai Lama, one of the reasons why he does it probably is because he wants to get away from that sort of probably what he considers superstition, right? Probably. And I mean, he's very much into science, and he likes he has kind of changed. I mean, the Tibetan society has been, prior to the Dalai Lama, was a very closed society, and it was a society where I think it's quite well known, there's a lot of superstition and strange things going on there. Even there's part of it which is very good, which is very traditional Buddhist teachings, and there's part of it which is much more less traditional Buddhist teachings. So I think that probably Dalai Lama has a good point. You know, why keep on with this tradition which probably doesn't make any sense anyway? So I would agree with that. But
so that he picked someone in India with a different title, some Pashtun Lama or something.
Yeah.
And the Chinese decided that that wasn't the one they wanted.
The whole thing becomes like politics, which is a bit of a shame, isn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My mother used to talk about a silver cord when you die.
Okay. Yeah.
Can you throw any light on that at all?
I think this is quite a common experience when people have near death experiences that you leave your body, and then you kind of, you can go out and you can see different realms. Sometimes you can see your relatives, on the other side, this kind of thing. But very often there's this idea of a barrier. You come to a barrier, and if you go beyond that barrier, there's no returning, in a sense. And that, I think, is a similar idea, this idea of a silver cord. It's like at that point, when you get to the barrier, you cut the silver cord, and you move on, or you come back again. So there's a point where there's a connection with this life, and there comes a point when that connection is completely broken, and then you have to move on to a future.
And is that a Buddhist?
It's perfectly within Buddhist principles, but it's not actually specifically mentioned by the Buddha or anything like that. But yeah. Okay. Anything else? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Great, that's wonderful, isn't it? Yeah, that's excellent, yeah. Okay. Good then. Okay. So let's see what this question has to say. How can you use meditation to cope with the thought of death? Okay. So usually it's the other way around, right? Actually, thought of death is actually a meditation practice in itself. To actually use the thought of death, it actually becomes a meditation practice, and it is a very useful meditation practice. It's a very good thing to do. Perhaps the problem here is that somebody is a little bit afraid of death. I mean, who isn't a little bit afraid of death? It makes sense. So you want to then understand how to cope with it. But actually, the best way to cope with that is just to get used to the idea of death right here, right now, right? Not to wait till you are kind of on your last legs and about to die, but get used to it now. This is really the best way here. And the death contemplation is one of the contemplations that the Buddha taught many, many times, again and again in his discourses. It's a very important and very useful contemplation. And he specifically said that it should be used by everybody. Anybody who is kind of interested in a spiritual life should do the death contemplation. And the reason for that is because death contemplation is, it kind of sets your priorities straight, right? If you know you're going to die, you're going to die quite soon, suddenly it becomes very clear what is important in life and what isn't important. And you kind of chuck out all those things that don't really matter. So your priorities become very straight when you start thinking about death. You know you should come to the Armadale group, right? That sort of thing. So this is what it's about. So that is one thing, your priorities become straight. And another thing which is also very powerful, if you do this contemplation properly, maybe we can do a death reflection one of these days, is that your mind becomes very clear, and you tend to abandon all the hindrances, all the problems, all the anger, all the desires in life. All of these things tend to go out the window when you contemplate death. And why is that? The reason for that is because, you know, if you are faced with death, if you've got that kind of death, you know, think, you know, you're going to maybe die in an hour, right? Now, if you're going to die in an hour, are you going to be angry with the people around you? Are you going to say, it's my last chance to get angry with you. I'm going to take that chance. Is that what you're going to think? Or are you going to say, forget about all that. This anger, these problems that we have, they belong to this world. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. I'm going somewhere else. Why on earth would I want the last thing you're going to do is to be angry when you die, right? You're on the deathbed. You're about to leave everybody behind. You couldn't care less about what other people say, even if they, are abusive or whatever. Say whatever, just do your stuff. I'm moving on anyway. So it gives a sense of clarity, right? This world doesn't matter so much anymore. All of this is kind of irrelevant. So you become very peaceful because of that. Are you going to have any desires if you're about to die? Are you going to think about your next house, right? Your next car, your next relationship, all these kind of things, right? All of that too is kind of irrelevant. So you're not going to really have any desires. And these are the two things that keeps the mind kind of busy. These are the two main hindrances, we say, in meditation practice, is desire and anger. Ill will and desire are the two main problems. So because the death reflection has the ability to subdue these two main hindrances of meditation, it's a very powerful technique to make you peaceful. And sometimes, if you find it hard to meditate, you can't find any peace, you can try the death contemplation and see what happens, right? So how do you do it? And what you really have to do is sometimes to remind yourself, I'm going to die, right? I'm going to die. In other words, you understand you haven't got this endless life in front of you. Sometimes you kind of know you're going to die, right? We sort of know that, but it's not really kind of sunk in properly. It's not really part of us. You know it, but you don't know it, if you know what I mean. So you have to make it more real. This is what this is about. You have to actually make it real. I am actually going to die. It's real, right? It's not some kind of fantasy, some possibility that maybe it's going to happen or not. It is real. And once it becomes real, the more real you're able to make it, the more power it has for you to get rid of these hindrances and these delusions, which makes it hard to stay in the present moment. This is one of the reasons why the Buddha says it is so powerful. It's a bit like the mind is intoxicated, right? If you're not clear that you're going to die, if it kind of seems like, it's far away in the future, whatever, the mind tends to be intoxicated. It's a bit like being drunk on alcohol or something like that. And that intoxication is the feeling that, it's going to last a long time, I can do what I want, let me enjoy life, all these kind of things. And suddenly, when you get the clarity of you are going to die, that intoxication vanishes, and your mind becomes clear, and you understand your priorities, you understand, you get rid of the hindrances, and you have clarity and peace as a consequence. This is the idea with death contemplation. And the way that the Buddha said to do it, there's a few discourses about this, and one of the things is just to remind you how easy it is to die, right? We read about people every day in the traffic accidents and all kinds of problems and all kinds of things, and suddenly they're gone, right? It happens all the time. I just got a phone call in the monastery. The great thing about being a monk is that you hear about people dying all the time. It's wonderful. And they call at the monastery, oh, please, can we come and do our funeral? We're so sad, you know, somebody has died in our family. You hear about it all the time. And the amazing thing is that, you know, you get the whole spectrum. Sometimes you get little babies that die. Sometimes you get people in their 20s, right, or teenagers, or people in their whatever age. And, so, you know, of course, most of the time they're really old people, but far from always. So when you remember that, and remember that you are just a person just like everybody else, you're not special, right? Let's face it, I'm not special, I'm just an ordinary person. Suddenly, death can come just like that. You just don't know. And if you think like that, it's a bit scary perhaps at the beginning. For some people it can be scary, but it's incredibly, if you can get used to that idea, very, very powerful and very, very useful. For the spiritual path. So remember the possibilities, you know, you walk outside, whatever it is, and then you remember that it can happen at, basically, it can happen at any time, right? The Buddha says to bring it close, right? Okay, I might die tomorrow. Ooh, it's already frightening. Okay, I might in a week's time. You start with a long way away, and you bring it closer and closer to the present, right? So imagine if you're going to die in an hour, right? Ooh. And the Buddha actually says, and this is actually in the suttas, and maybe this, I'm not sure if this is what he recommended for everybody, but it says the ideal way of doing the death contemplation is to think that you could die on the next breath, right? Try to imagine that. It's very hard to imagine, isn't it? You could die on the next breath. Very, very difficult. So that is the ideal way. But anyway, you try your best. You try what you can do, and then you do that. But the other thing about, you know, what all of this does, it tends to make us better people, basically. We remember the priorities, remember kindness, remember goodness in the world. And one of the things that I have, is so obvious when you read the discourses of the Buddha, that it comes down to one thing that we all should practice, and that is being kind, being good people, being generous, being compassionate, all those good things. That is really the most important thing here. And it's not just most important, it is absolutely crucial, right? It is so fundamental. And I think if people understood how important it is, we put an enormous amount of effort just to be kind, just to be good, just to be generous, etc., etc., etc. And I was just reading a verse in the Dhammapada. The Dhammapada is one of the famous Buddhist scriptures. It's a whole sequence of about 400 verses, most of them spoken by the Buddha. And in one of these verses, the Buddha said, well, if a person should do one good thing, right? If they should do one good thing, then they should do it again and again and again and again into the future. They should never stop doing good things. And the reason is, many, many reasons, but the reason, for example, if you're interested in meditation practice, one of the things the Buddha says all the time is that the foundation for any kind of meditation practice, to make it work, is always virtue, morality, kindness, goodness. This is the foundation. It can only work if you progress in your practice of kindness and goodness and virtue. When I say virtue, I don't mean just, you know, avoiding the bad things. I mean doing the good things. I don't just mean physical and verbal virtue. I mean mental virtue. Think the right things, right? This is Buddhism is very kind of, has a very broad definition of what virtue and morality actually means. And this, the Buddha says, this is the foundation for all meditation practice. So if you come here and you find that your mind races at 100 miles or a million miles an hour or whatever it is, but one of the best ways of improving your meditation practice is to ask yourself, can you do anything more about your virtue, your morality in life? And it's just so crucial. It is so absolutely fundamental. And I think it is what the vast majority of spiritual practice should focus just on that. And that is really the kind of the crucial, the crux of the matter here. And the Buddha goes so far as to say that whenever you have a meal, you should never, this is actually to the monastics, you should never have a meal without sharing with somebody. He says if people understood the power of this, of generosity and kindness and sharing, you would never eat anything without sharing with somebody else, right? Think about that, right? He says that if you understood the power of kindness and generosity, you would never, you know, even if you're just throwing out the dishwater and there's a few grains of rice left in the dishwater, you would say, may this be for the little beings on the ground, right? That's the power. So you we take absolutely every possibility in life to do something good, to say something kind, to think a kind thought. This is not always easy, right? I mean, sometimes in life, sometimes you feel really good and you feel really happy, everything is going very well, right? Oh, and you feel very generous and you want to help people out. At those times, it's easy to be good, right? It's quite easy because you're already feeling good. But then there are other times in life when you feel a bit grumpy or feel a bit down or you're angry with somebody, right? But those are the times that it really matters. The easy times, okay, kind of, you know, that's of course all good and well. But in those times when you are not feeling all that good, you're feeling angry with somebody. So, you know, it's so easy to let that anger come out in your actions, to say something which isn't so nice, to do something which isn't so nice. But this is where you have the chance to change, right? And to actually do something different. So you're angry with somebody and you know, I can't. It is so important to be kind. This is the foundation of the whole spiritual life. I can't allow myself to allow this come out in my speech. What can I do? How can I change this? Can I be kind somehow instead of actually, you know, letting this come out of my mouth in the wrong way? And then you learn to actually be kind, even though you don't feel the best. You learn to do the right thing. You learn maybe to avoid that person initially. And then when you feel up to it, you can do something positive instead. At the very least, you can be neutral. This is kind of the ground where we learn. Like where it is difficult, that is where you learn. And then you learn to change your perception. You have to understand the person in a different way. You know that they are a suffering being just like myself. They want kindness. That's what they really want. And you have that understanding and compassion instead of feeling upset and angry with them. It's a very powerful moment. Every moment when you feel upset with somebody or something is wrong, it's a very powerful moment to change your perception and move it in a different way and actually do something kind rather than allowing that negativity to somehow spill out and come out of you. So this is really such a powerful foundation of the spiritual life. And it's taken me so long to, you know, still now it is kind of dawning on me how important this is. And it's only really when you know, the more you read the Buddhist suttas, the more you understand the power of this kind of thing. And to give an example, this is a simile I like to tell people all the time. This is a simile which the Buddha gives on how meditation practice actually works. And what he says is that if you are a person, you have been out, you know, you are a good person practicing the right way. And if you are a good person practicing the right way, and when you come home in the evening, you sit down or you lie down or whatever, you feel good about yourself as a consequence, because you're living a good life. You close your eyes and you just have a sense of natural happiness inside of yourself because you feel good about yourself as a consequence. And what the Buddha says, this is the simile he uses, in my opinion, a very beautiful simile for how the virtuous life works in a sense. And this, now remember, this is also about thinking kind thoughts, right? He says it's just like a house on the slope of a mountain. Now the house is perhaps facing east. So when the sun goes down in the west behind the mountain, and the shadow of the mountain is completely envelops, completely surrounds that house, right? Absolutely. And there's no part of that house which is not surrounded and enveloped in that shadow from that mountain there. And it says exactly the same thing with somebody who's virtuous. They've done so many good things, done so much kindness over such a long period of time, that when they sit back and when they lie down or whatever, in the evening when they come home from work, they are enveloped and surrounded by the good actions, by body, speech and mind. You can't avoid being happy, right? Isn't that a great kind of thing? You can't avoid being happy. I mean, that's pretty powerful. So you just sit back, and because all the goodness that you have done comes back to you, you have to feel happy. You have to feel good about yourself. You have no choice. Even if you want to be grumpy, you can't do it. So there you are. So this is that wonderful simile. And this is what we're trying to aim at, right? This is where we're trying to go, to the point where you're actually able to be so generally good in your body, speech and mind that you just sit down and you have to feel naturally good about yourself. We all feel good about ourselves, really good about ourselves sometimes, but you want to make this kind of a solid foundation in your life. And of course what happens then if you do that, if you sit down, you come here to the arm and leg group, and you close your eyes and you just relax, right? As you settle down, as you relax, then those memories of the past come up. The fact that you have been doing all this goodness and kindness in the past, you've been avoiding all the bad things, they surface by themselves, because that is where your mind is at. That's what your mind is thinking of. That is your intentions, right? And of course, then what happens is that when you become peaceful very quickly, because the present moment is happy, you become mindful. If the present moment is happy, you don't want to think about this, you don't want to be tired or anything. Mindfulness arises. Mindfulness arises as a consequence of enjoying being here, right? And you enjoy being here if you're happy here. You see how all these things kind of work together, right? And this is why virtue is so important for meditation practice, because it allows the mind to stay in the present moment. So then you have happiness and mindfulness coming together. And when happiness and mindfulness come together, it's an incredibly powerful thing, because that is what leads the mind then into very deep states afterwards. This is the trick of meditation, is mindfulness and happiness coming together. Mindfulness just means being able to be present, right? That's what mindfulness means, with clarity. Then happiness comes, and then you start focusing on things like the breath or loving kindness, and it becomes incredibly, incredibly powerful. And you feel like transported, right, into this new realm, into all these things. And it all comes from that. But the basis, the foundation, is kindness. So make this something very, very powerful in your life. Ask yourself, remember this at every moment in your life, if you can. How can I do better? How can I think differently? How can I treat people with even more kindness? How can I treat myself with more kindness? And then you build up something inside of yourself, which is incredibly powerful, which leads to your happiness, to the happiness of others, both in this life and also in future lives. And wow, it becomes a wonderful thing. Anyway, so that is. Any questions about that?
Yeah, can I ask you one thing? Yes. See, we are living sort of peaceful and quiet life. That's what I think, myself.
Yeah.
But if somebody comes in and triggers something or something, I was hooked into the negativity of them.
Yeah.
How can I? That's what I do is normally I do walk away and do my own stuff, so I won't get involved in that stuff. No? People say I'm a loner sometimes too, because I don't want to get this extra unwanted from outside.
Sure.
I serve my own self.
Yeah.
I don't know what is right or wrong here. Just to please them and be there for them, or.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really depends on it depends on so many things, it depends on your obligations and all kind of stuff. But one of the reasons why you come here is to recharge your batteries a little bit, right? To go up to stay here with this group, and you feel better, and then when you go back, you have more energy to deal with these kind of things. This is one of the great things about being a monk. You can just hide away in your little hut in the forest, right? And you recharge your batteries, and then it's easy again. But sometimes you just don't interact too much. If somebody is negative, just listen to what they have to say and nod your head or whatever. There's no need to reply. You don't have to say anything. You have no obligation to say anything. Just remain peaceful. And then when they're gone, right? And if you start to interact, it often lasts longer, right? And then they respond back, and you get into this kind of thing. So just listen, whatever, okay, bye-bye, and then they go, right?
So the mind is very waiting to get those things into me, That's what I'm struggling.
Yeah.
See, the mind is waiting, if they are triggering some words or something,
Yeah.
I'm very quick to get into my head and
upsets your thinking very quickly. Yeah. Well, you just learn to be more, stand back a little bit more, just like meditation practice. You're just observing the things on the screen. You're not getting involved. And it's the same thing with other people. You just learn to observe them without getting involved, right? You just see, okay, they are upset, why should it affect me? It doesn't have to. So you just observe, not allow it to affect you. I mean, sometimes if it is family member, somebody close to it can be very hard, because you are emotionally involved. But if it is people who you don't really have any close relationship to, it's actually quite easy to do. You just observe and say, fine, whatever. And don't really react at all, and just allow them. Sometimes if they just get to say their thing, they're happy anyway, and they have said their thing. You don't have to, that's it, end of story. So just learn that. And then you go back to yourself and do a bit of metta, and next time you have even less reaction. And then gradually you learn to deal with these things. It's not hard. Yeah.
The second thing, in New Zealand, do you have a central like this to
In there are
Auckland?
Monasteries in
Auckland.
Yeah, there is a Buddhist society in Auckland. And I think if you, just Google on Auckland Buddhist Society, you can probably. Are you? Is that where you?
I saw three or four, but no, I don't know which one is similar.
Yeah, just try. There's nothing quite similar to this, probably. You know, every Buddhist society has its own kind of little idiosyncrasy. So just try them out and see what happens. You know, but I think there's something called the Auckland Buddhist Society, which is a little bit similar to this, which is emphasis on meditation practice and this kind of thing. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
You probably answered my question in the response to this lady, but when you attend a funeral or you get dragged in on suicide, attempted suicide, and grief, something that affects you, you're using the same principle to distinguish yourself.
Basically, you keep a certain distance. I mean, it all, you know, you. I think it's possible to keep an emotional kind of distance and still be able and still respond in a good way. In fact, often you can respond better if you have a bit of emotional distance to what's going on. So you see, this is what's going on, and you know, this is life. Life is like this, and once you understand that this is life, this is the way things have to be, basically, with some people, then you don't get so involved anymore. It is when you think that it should be different. Or you know, or I can help out, I can make it a bit different, or whatever. Once you get involved in that sense, you tend to be emotionally dragged in. But if you realize that, well, this is life, it is like this, you keep a bit of distance, and if you can say something good or helpful, you do. If you can't, it's also okay. Either way,
Thank you.
Yeah. 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 Yes?
Can you sort of distance yourself a little when it is emotionally connected to mother, like a child?
Yeah, it's much more difficult. Yeah, that's why I'm a monk, you know. So it's not so easy, but this is one of the great things about the spiritual path. I mean, I also have family, you know, I have parents and all that kind of thing. So of course, I have some of the same kind of things. But one of the great things about the spiritual path is that the idea is that gradually you change, right? You kind of you start from a certain point, and gradually you change and become a different person.
I don't argue back as much now.
Well, that's exactly it. That's a positive thing, right? Because you feel better for that as well, right? Everybody feels better for that. And as you, and one of the things that happens as you grow on the spiritual path, you feel more independent. This is one of the consequences, because you have more of your happiness comes from inside of yourself. And that independence means that, you know, your child or your partner or whatever it is, if they do something, you know, silly, you kind of, you know, you shrug your shoulders. I don't need you. Yeah, basically, that's exactly right, isn't it? You don't actually need them so much. This is the whole point. Yeah. And then you can actually respond better to the situation as well. Lots of advantages. Yeah.